This is number 3 in our Sophiad series, Wisdom Texts at the Jacamar Door, and you're listening to Sorka Berry, your editor and reader. This week we have for you part 1 of a series of texts from the Phaedrus by Plato. Here Socrates addresses Phaedrus. All soul is immortal, for what is always in motion is immortal. But that which owes its motion to something else, even though it is itself the cause of motion in another thing, may cease to be in motion, and therefore cease to live. Only what moves itself never ceases to be in motion, since it could not so cease without being false to its own nature. It is the source and prime origin of movement in all other things that move. Now, a prime origin cannot come into being. All that comes into being must derive its existence from a prime origin, but the prime origin itself from nothing. For if a prime origin were derived from anything, it would no longer be a prime origin. Moreover, since it does not come into being, it must also be indestructible. For since all things must be derived from a prime origin, if the prime origin is destroyed, it will not come into being again out of anything, nor any other thing out of it. So we see that the prime origin of motion is what moves itself, and this can neither be destroyed nor come into being. Otherwise, the whole universe and the whole creation would collapse and come to a stop, and there would be nothing by which it could again be set in motion and come into existence. Now, since it has been proved that what moves itself is immortal, a man need feel no hesitation in identifying it with the essence and definition of soul. For all body, which has its source of motion outside itself, is soulless. But a body which moves itself from within is endowed with soul, since self-motion is of the very nature of soul. If then it is established that what moves itself is identical with soul, it inevitably follows that the soul is uncreated and immortal. This must suffice concerning soul's immortality. Concerning its nature, we must give the following account. To describe it as it is would require a long exposition of which only a god is capable. But it is within the power of man to say in shorter compass what it resembles. Let us adopt this method and compare the soul to a winged charioteer and his team acting together. Now all the horses and charioteers of the gods are good and come of good stock, but in other beings there is a mixture of good and bad. First of all, we must make it plain that the ruling power in us men drives a pair of horses, and next, that one of these horses is fine and good and of noble stock, and the other the opposite in every way. So in our case, the task of the charioteer is necessarily a difficult and unpleasant business. Now, we must try to tell how it is we speak of both mortal and immortal living beings. Soul, taken as a whole, is in charge of all that is inanimate, and traverses the entire universe, appearing at different times in different forms. When it is perfect and winged, it moves on high and governs all creation. But the soul that has shed its wings falls until it encounters solid matter. There it settles and puts on an earthly body, which appears to be self-moving because of the power of soul that is in it. And this combination of soul and body is given the name of a living being and is termed mortal. There is not a single sound reason for positing the existence of such a being who is immortal, but because we have never seen or formed an adequate idea of a god, we picture him to ourselves as a being of the same kind as ourselves, but immortal. A combination of soul and body indissolubly joined forever. The existence of such beings and the use of such language about them we must leave to the will of God. Let us pass on, to consider the reason which causes a soul to shed and lose its wings. It is something like this. The function of a wing is to take what is heavy and raise it up to the region above, where the gods dwell. Of all things connected with the body, it has the greatest affinity with the divine, which is endowed with beauty, wisdom, goodness, and every other excellence. These qualities are the prime source of nourishment and growth to the wings of the soul. But their opposites, such as ugliness and evil, cause the wings to waste and perish. Behold, first in the procession, driving his winged team, goes Zeus, the mighty leader of the heavenly array, whose providence orders and watches over all things. There follows him a host of gods and spirits marshalled in 11 bands, for Hestia alone remains behind in the house of the gods, while the rest of the 12 ruler gods lead on their companies, each in the station which is appointed for him. Now, many glorious sights meet the eyes of the blessed gods on the journeys to and fro between the vault of heaven, which they take in pursuit each of his allotted task, and they are followed by whoever is able and willing to follow them, since jealousy has no place in the company of the divine. But when they go to the celebration of their high feast day, they take the steep path leading to the summit of the arch which supports the outer heaven. The teams of the gods, which are well matched and tractable, go easily, but the rest with difficulty. For the horse with the vicious nature, if he has not been well broken in, drags his rider down by throwing all his weight in the direction of the earth. Supreme, then, is the agony of the struggle which awaits the soul. Now, the souls that are termed immortal, when they reach the summit of the arch, go outside the vault and stand upon the back of the universe, standing where they are carried round by its revolution, while they contemplate what lies outside the heavens. But of this region beyond the skies, no mortal poet has sung or ever will sing in such strains as it deserves. Nevertheless, the fact is this. For we must have the courage to speak the truth, especially when the truth itself is our theme. The region of which I speak is the abode of the reality with which true knowledge is concerned, a reality without colour or shape, intangible but utterly real, apprehensible only by intellect, which is the pilot of the soul. So the mind of a god, sustained as it is by pure intelligence and knowledge, like that of every soul which is destined to assimilate its proper food, is satisfied at last with the vision of reality, and nourished and made happy by the contemplation of truth, until the circular revolution brings it back to its starting point. And in the course of its journey, it beholds absolute justice and discipline and knowledge. Not the knowledge which is attached to things which come into being, nor the knowledge which varies with the objects which we now call real, but the absolute knowledge which corresponds to what is absolutely real in the fullest sense. And when in like manner it has beheld and taken its fill of the other objects which constitute absolute reality, it withdraws again within the vault of heaven and goes home. And when it comes home, the charioteer sets his horses at their manger and puts ambrosia before them, and with it a draught of nectar to drink.